Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, it was Forest Focus as we enter what could be a pivotal couple of days for Nottingham Forest with a home game against Fulham tomorrow night. We'll look ahead to that match, review the draw at Crystal Palace in full, and reflect on the passing of a Reds legend in the company of, first of all, Reds fan Michael Temple. Temps, good morning. How are you doing?
Morning, fellas. Good, thank you.
Good to have you with us as ever. Also with us today is a man of celebrity status, and I'm not talking about Gary Birtles. Greg Mitchell, toe-to-toe with Gary Neville and Jamie Carragher. Had his own personal camera crew on Saturday at the NAB when I tried to get near him, but couldn't get close enough. Greg Mitchell, how are you doing?
I'm good. I'm on. Yeah, I'm good. I'm wide awake. Been up for a couple of hours and ready to go. How about yourself?
I got up 10 minutes ago. Yeah, ready to go. Squashed my hair down when we started. Not looking as brash as everyone else.
I wish I could do that.
Our third guest today, you hear the voice of Reds legend Gary Birtles. Gary, how are you doing?
Yeah, good, thank you. Yeah.
Good, good. Good to have you with us. Good to have you with us. We'll get into all the match action around Palace and Fulham shortly. And Greg wants to talk about the museum, I know, as well, before we depart. But we should start with the passing of Reds legend Larry Lloyd, one of the Miracle Men and European Cup winners. Passed away last week at the age of 75. Really wanted Gary to come on today so he could talk a little bit about him as a player and a character. Gary, what would you say about your former teammate?
Well, he was an unbelievable player. You know, he used to kick you in training and kick you on a Saturday afternoon as well. That was Larry. You know, him and Burnsy were just pivotal in all the success that Forrest achieved in that particular era. You know, it's always, people talk about striking partnerships, but centre-half partnerships are so important. And that partnership was as good as anything at that particular time. And they complemented each other. And yeah, he was a real character, Larry. You know, everything was wrong in the world sometimes, but then he made you laugh. And yeah, I mean, you saw the tributes from Liverpool fans as well. They, you know, how much they respected what he did at Liverpool for them. And some saying that, you know, Liverpool shouldn't have let him go. So that just shows you the magnitude of what a good player he was.
And just a word on character. You had some characters in that dressing room, not least both centre halves. And, you know, what was it like being in there every day with him?
Oh, it was a laugh a minute because you knew what he was going to do. He'd come in grumpy. You expected it. But I'll tell you what, if you're out on a night out with him, you were glad to have him by your side with Burnsy. That is a fact, because nobody had come near you with those two either side of you. It was when he had the pub in Nottingham, the stage door, you know, we always used to go there. And we had a Christmas, when we had a Christmas deal, we always went there. And yeah, it was fun being around him.
Certainly, I'm sure. Certainly. A sad loss to football as well, with Trevor Francis passing early this year as well. Sad loss of Forest. Right. Greg, kick us off on what you made of the game. It was pretty miserable on Saturday night because some people were once, you know, really down on our podcast as well. And others were like, oh, we're out of the relegation zone. So it was kind of glass half full, glass half empty. depending on how you saw it. What about you personally? What did you make of it?
Well, there's no wild guess to what my glasses. It's certainly half full. We're out the relegation zone. We didn't lose. And the second half was a slight improvement when he finally made the changes that I think we were all crying out to see. The first half was miserable. It was, you know, and there were some poor individual performances, but we've somehow got away with it and we've got out the relegation zone and we've got a massive chance now on Tuesday to really pull away again, because fixtures for this coming week are in our favour and we just have to capitalise on it and we have to learn from Saturday. And there was some glaring errors. We've got to learn quick and certainly select the right team and just be a little bit more positive. I think that's what we showed later on in the second half, that especially with, well, I'll tell you what annoyed me actually, how well we played when we were 1-0 down. When we were 1-0 down, we were on the front foot, we were attacking. As soon as we scored that goal, it seemed to change again. We reverted back a little bit. And I think just that lack of confidence was showing. So going into Tuesday, another winnable game, I think we've just got to, you know, be a little bit more positive and go from there. But yeah, it's certainly glass half full for me. We're out the relegation zone within a few days of being chucked in it.
Greg, thanks to me. Not to be negative, but when was the last time we beat Fulham?
Well, away, it wasn't that long ago. I'm not sure at home, but we have put some performances in against them.
We got done 5 by them this season.
Yeah, I know, but you saw them on against Sheffield United. They looked terrible until the mini comeback. We can certainly go for them. I'm not worried. I'm more worried about how we play than how Fulham play on Tuesday, because we can beat them.
Thank you very much to Jeff for becoming a channel member. Really appreciate that. And well done to Greg and Forza and everyone for the display before the match. We were hoping, Temps, after something like that, it would inspire the players. As Greg said and everyone else said, the first half was so flat and so poor. To what degree do you think that's down to the players, and to what degree is it down to team selection? Because I kind of felt like Nuno set us up to probably perform like that to some degree. What was your take on it?
Yeah, maybe so with the Yates and Sangare screening. But what he didn't set up for was the amount of time he conceded possession so freely and easily. And Sangare was culpable for that quite a bit, wasn't he? You've got to value the ball against teams like Palace. And if you're going to get on the front foot and build attacks, then it takes time and poise. And we didn't have that. It was such a haphazard first half performance that it had everything to do with individual responsibility of players executing their skills, doing their thing, rather than the way that Nuno had set them up or the team that he picked. So with hindsight, yes, we'd have probably made a few changes there, and a couple of fellas didn't step up to the plate. But at that point, it's not down to Nuno. I watched the game with a Palace fan, and even at 1-0 up, that he was convinced they were going to concede. They'd had this pattern in recent times of being a bit frail defensively, and we just didn't take advantage of that quite as much as we might. There were passive periods where we let them have the ball, give them too much respect. And as the game wore on, we could see that they were there for the taking and it was an opportunity missed. So I think from that perspective, we've got to be disappointed with that performance. We saw enough to suggest that we're going to pick up some points at home and give Fulham a game. But that's 2 points dropped for me. I didn't think Palace were great shakes. And the fact was, we did not fulfil our potential, looked a little bit fearful in possession and didn't take advantage of a team that came to us with 3 points on offer. I'm disappointed we didn't step up and take that.
It was interesting watching the game live and on highlights, Gary. Live, I felt second half, we controlled it quite a lot, but we created very little. If you watched not much today, almost all the highlights were Palace, and especially Eze, who I thought was excellent. What was your take on how well we actually played or not?
Well, what annoyed me and always annoys me as a striker, when your teammates in good areas and good situations don't get the ball in early enough. And we had so many occasions where we could have got the ball in that box early enough. Do they not realise that Chris Wood benefits hugely, as we've seen, from balls being put in the box early? Do they not see that Chris Wood is the striker? And that if they put it in there early, that's his forte. I mean, I thought as soon when the goal went in, I said to people around me, what a header that was. I'll tell you what, that's so difficult to do what he did. That was a fabulous finish. It really was. And you just see, if he gets that service, he will score your goals. And they dither. You know, it really annoys me. Put it in, have one touch, then put it in. Don't look up. Just put it in an area where you know Chris Wood's going to be, and he will be there. If he's not, he'll put his hand up. But, you know, give him the opportunity. Number of times, again and again, we got wide areas and we took two touches, three touches, then we turned round and played back. And next minute, we're back on the halfway line. You know, just put a bit of pressure on. Like, you know, we've said already, they were there for the taking. And we didn't put them under enough pressure when we got the opportunity in good areas to do that.
So one of my big gripes, I don't know, I think you're going to agree with me, is we don't get enough men in the box. Like, we don't see the right winger isn't at the back post when the left winger's crossing, and there's no midfield runner. It's always like, poor Chris Wood. I mean, like you say, that goal's up there with goal of the season for me for technical ability. But he really had no right to score from there as well, did he?
No, I don't think, I think it took Crystal Palace by surprise how good it was. But I was, luckily, I was, you know, that end of the ground, you know, right in line with what he did. And I thought, well, that is some finish, it really is. But I think you've got to go back, you know, we're talking about winning games. It's been a little bit inexplicable to me, a couple of the games. I'll go back, the Brighton game. They were there for the taking. They'd got a thrashing in midweek in the European game they played. They got massive injury problems, and I was told they were there for the taking. You know, you'll never have a better chance of beating Brighton. And that's how it should have been. And we left our best players on the bench, our most creative players on the bench. And then the Luton game, we took our best players off when we were winning 1-0. I know one was injured, but that to me just doesn't make any sense. It really doesn't. You know, when you can see a team decimated by injuries, go there and get on the front foot. And you see, it staggers me sometimes.
I watched Brighton v Liverpool yesterday. Brighton were so much better than the team we played. They had loads of players back. Yeah. I think you're right. I suppose, Greg, that comes down to what you were saying about Nuno's team selection. Has it become a bit too conservative? The two sixes playing, he really seems to stick with Origi, who I don't think is playing badly, but I just he hasn't justified the starts for me. Is that do you think Nuno's got to shake it up a bit with his team selection?
It feels like it for me. I mean, I was having a good discussion with my mate yesterday about this, and they don't want too much change to upset it, because obviously, you know, you've got to get a settled team. But I feel like the settled team isn't really working. So better late than never. I think we saw what a positive impact a positive change can do on the pitch. And I think we've got to just be a little bit, we've got to make teams fear us a little bit more. And that team selection on Saturday didn't put fear into a team. It was conservative. It felt like an away 11 rather than a home attacking 11. And I just feel like there's some players on that bench that can really affect a game more than just your Sangari and Yates in the middle and selections like that. So I really hope that everyone's fit, everyone's eager to go, and he selects that attacking team that the majority of us probably want to see.
Greg, I think, you know, looking at the first half, I think we were so sluggish. We moved the ball slowly, and that was the difference between the two teams. I think Palace were moving it quicker, getting their key players involved quicker, and we got it. We're taking two, three touches on the ball, putting our foot on top of the ball, you know, bringing it back, passing it square. And it was just, it was just very strange to watch. It was a hard watch, that first 45 minutes. You know, you're thinking, Crystal Palace, you look to their side and there's no real standout, you know, player that you think is going to take you apart. Eze, you mentioned, he can do on his day. But there's nothing there to frighten us. And, you know, the way we just played it was just slow. It was methodical. You know, you didn't see a spark. You know, when Hudson-Odoi picked it up, you felt something might happen. It's got to be more positive from now on, because, you know, Fulham are nobody's mugs. You know, people say, everybody said those two games are winnable games, but, you know, Fulham can turn up on a day and make you look silly. And then we've got Tottenham, of course, who came back from 1-0 down against Luton and just, edged that game. And the other teams picked points up as well. You know, Burnley were one up at Chelsea. And it was all getting a little bit too close. The others seem to be doing a little bit better than us at the moment, those teams around us.
It did feel like, for the first time this season, a real nervy end of season relegation battle. Everyone's checking the phone saying who's winning, and Luton are still winning. And it was a lot like you were getting that feeling that we had last season. Maybe that'll help, you know, that fearful factor. You know, the atmosphere was a little bit better, I thought. And it was a reminder of what these run-ins can be like, that's for sure.
Thank you very much to Roddy McKellar for signing up for membership as well. That's really great. And I've got to say, it's like, I'm shocked that we've got 330 people with us live in a good way. On a bank holiday, I thought we might have like 30 people with us at this stage. So really good to have everyone on board. Quick word for our sponsors, the Trent Navigation. Obviously, tomorrow night we are back at home against Fulham, as Gary said, a tough game, but hopefully one we can win, as Greg said. So here's a short video on the match day experience at the NAB, and we shall see you on the other side. It was great to say hello to people at the NAB on Saturday. I wasn't there for that long. My daughter really wanted to go to the club shop and buy a key ring, of all things. So we did get that. But I know Mikey was there for ages, and Mark Southerns as well. And they said it was good to see so many people. Hopefully Mikey's woken up on a different side of the bed now this morning. He wasn't best pleased at the weekend. But it's a new day, so we can all kick on against Fulham, hopefully. Temps, a lot of what Gary said there around the way we move the ball and everything, side to side, a bit slow. It probably comes down to the midfield setting the tone. Sangare and Yates, you know, got a lot of criticism for their performances collectively and individually. Sangare, especially because of the fee. What did you make of his performance where he got hooked at half-time?
He was really poor. He was probably our least effective player on the pitch in the first half. Wasn't brave on the ball, but more importantly than that, didn't do the simple things well. So some of the possession that he conceded was off the back of really sloppy 10-yard passes. And you can't do that at this stage of the season in a team in this situation. You need to pick the players that you trust and have them enact a game plan. And Yates, he normally does that. That's why successive managers always have him in their team. So I'll give him the benefit of the doubt and say he had an off day at the weekend. Sangare is systematically struggling to get a foothold in this team. He doesn't know what his role is. He's struggling to find quality on the ball. He can't get going. And I just fear that in the summer, he could easily be shipped on or find a loan move somewhere. And it'll be one of the forgotten men of Forest really, really quickly, unless he steps up and fulfills his potential. He just cannot find any kind of form in a Forest shirt. I've called for him to be in the side on several occasions because of what I know he has been and what I think he could be. But what he's showing Forest fans is that he's not the man to trust in the situation that we find ourselves in. I thought he was extremely poor.
I thought he looked as nervous as a baby. He looked nervous when he was in possession. You know, he looked like there was a panic there every time he had possession of the ball. You know, like you said, he didn't seem to know what to do with the ball at times. And that's just lack of confidence. And, you know, it was evident, and at least it was addressed at half-time.
I do think it's a lack of confidence. Like, for, I thought, the thing is, he does some really good stuff that Yates can't do. Like, he's, I talk about ceilings and floors. He can do a lot of good stuff, but then the basics, something goes wrong. And I thought he shrunk. Obviously, you know, he's a physically big guy, but mentally, I thought his confidence drained from about that 30-minute mark. And he seemed to give the ball away 5 or 6 times. I think there's a stat that he recovered the ball 11 times, but he gave it away about 10 as well. So, yeah, I thought it was the right decision to take him off. I'm not writing him off as a signing, but at the moment, I struggle to pick him because you don't know what you're going to get from him. Like, he can disappear in games. And I suppose, is that, Gary, why Ryan Yates keeps getting picked? Because ideally, he wouldn't be starting games because he's technically not the best player. But at least you know the ceiling and the floor with Ryan Yates. There's not too much of a gap. You probably know what you're going to get with him. So he's not the best player, but that's why he gets picked.
You know what you're going to get from him. We always have done. You know, he does the basics. He breaks play up. But you can't, I don't think at home against a team like Crystal Palace, no disrespect to them, you can have two players of that calibre in a home game when you need to get 3 points. You need a little bit of creative ability, and that puts a little bit more pressure on Gibbs-White and, you know, to perform on a regular basis, creating everything for us. And that's the mystery of Elanga on the bench again. People saying, well, he might not be 100% fit. Well, if he's not 100% fit, why is he on the bench? or if he's that, you know, start him, give him an hour and, you know, see what he can do. He might just put us 1-0 up instead of, yeah, having to come on and expect to get us back in the game, you know. So it's those little things that can cost you, you know, the Premier League towards the end of a season. You know, we don't want to happen what happened last season. Yes, it was great when you look back at it, beating Arsenal to stay up, but we don't want that again. I want to see us safe, you know, before then, you know, and beating teams that, you know, we should be beating, you know, at this present time.
Gary,
you
I've got
to see midfield, Greg. Go on, sorry, go on.
No, I've got a question for Gary. When Sangari got subbed off, the reaction was, you know, it wasn't nice to hear. It was obvious what a lot of the crowd thought. Have you ever had that when you've been subbed or one of your teammates have been subbed, like the ironic cheers and like, how does that make you feel? Because I felt he didn't have the best game, but I felt bad for him coming off that pitch.
It's time for today's Lucky Land horoscope with Victoria Cash.
Life's gotten mundane, so shake up the daily routine and be adventurous with a trip to Lucky Land. You know what they say, your chance to win starts with a spin. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com to play over 100 social casino-style games for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void or prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
To be fair, I never got, you know, I started games, you know, at Forest when we were winning things and didn't really, you know, get hooked that many times. Old Trafford, perhaps. But, the fans, the very knowledgeable fans are, and if you can see you're trying everything you possibly can to do the right thing, they'll stick behind you. But I think at times maybe they can see a little bit something different and, you know, something's not quite right with the player on the pitch. He's not trying as much as he probably should be. He's not taking a chance and do the positive thing. You know, that's when it all gets a little bit, you know, nervy. The crowd get nervy. You can feel it in the stand when you're sitting there watching it. And, you know, as a player, you don't really feel it because it's just a buzz. You know, when, you know, people ask me, can you hear it, things when you played? It's just a cacophony of noise. You know, it really is. And it's never very nice when, you know, a player has that reaction from the home fans. But, you know, it's the Premier League we're talking about. We want to stay in it. And, you know, the fans want us to stay there and they want to see the best players on the pitch. And unfortunately, at the moment, you know, Sangare doesn't come into that category.
Yeah, I agree. And we're not, he's not a scapegoat. Say he's a scapegoat. I don't think he is. You can only call what you see. And like I'm saying, I think he's probably a good footballer. I'm sure he is. He's spent 35 million quid on him. But at this present time, I don't think you can justify picking him because he didn't play well enough.
If you remember rightly, last season, a certain player called Brennan Johnson was getting a little bit of grief at times, wasn't he? And we were all asking the question, why are they picking on Brennan? Young lad who's doing, you know, what he's done for us and doing for us. You know, we could have gone down if it hadn't been for Brennan, but he was still getting, you know, little bits of stick from fans at times. And I remember, hey, this the greatest player Forest have had, John Robertson, even he was getting stick when I played, you know, at times. And you're thinking, what the hell's going on? You know, this is Robbo we're talking about. And it's not just a generational thing. I think it's always been there. And fans will always want to do that because they're desperate for us to win.
Yeah, and players can massively come good. Again, there's examples within this team and last season. I know someone said Renan Lodi in the comments, and I agree with that. Nico Williams, you know, it looks like one of our best, most consistent players now, and obviously Chris Wood as well, who was, you know, struggling last season and is arguably player of the season this season, along with Murillo. So I do believe Sangare can come good, but right now I just don't think he's playing well. So who should be playing in midfield for you, Greg? Is it Dominguez? Is it Gibbs White, who I thought did really well second half? What would you like to see be Fulham?
Well, again, it's the whole players on the bench are better when they're on the bench, aren't they? But yeah, I'd have Dominguez. I'd love to see we had a little bit of a taster of it with Gibbs White playing a little bit further back with Reina up in front of him. And I'd love to see that. And I'd be confident with Reina starting on Tuesday. I'd love to see that team. And I think, yeah, I'd put Dominguez, Gibbs White and Reina in there. I think that's more of an attacking positive, going to create more chances. I think they already showed a little bit. There's a link up. Reina gave it to Gibbs White for that beautiful ball in for Wood. And seeing that little bit of confidence, it excites you as a fan. So you want to see more of it. So for me, that's what I'd go with, something like that.
What about you, Temps, in terms of midfield balance? Because it feels like the key to getting it right for Fulham for me.
I think the Gibbs White dropping back for Sangare, Reina in at 10 is the attacking move, isn't it? I wonder if that's a change of gear when you need it last 30 minutes rather than doing it from the off. I think the kind of similar but different change to let someone prove that they can affect the game more is straight swap Dominguez in for Sangare and keep Reina as a bit of a weapon. But we scored our goal with Gibbs White playing slightly deeper. Reina was on just off the striker by that point. And it certainly does. It gives us more attacking intent at the expense of a bit of defensive solidity. But if that defensive solidity is a player who's out of form and not affecting the ball going forward, then it's a change you can justify making. So what would I do? I'd probably give Dominguez a go before I had Reina and Gibbs White in the same side. I think Fulham are a slightly different proposition to Palace and perhaps more adept, more effective at picking us off if we find ourselves overcommitting. But with hindsight, I think this was probably the game in which you could have played Reina and Gibbs White side by side. So the change I'd make for Tuesday night is Dominguez in for Sangare. I don't think there's any prospect of Sangare starting the game after being hooked at half time. Alanga's probably the other guy that will come back in if there is a way we can make a change at centre-half. He'll do that as well with Felipe. So I think there's three spots up for grabs. But the central midfield balance for me would be Dominguez in, keep Reina on the bench for the last 20 minutes. I think it'd be really, really bold if we see Gibbs White and Reina starting the game together.
Yeah. The half-time subs were interesting. I liked them initially, but I thought Origi would go to a more central position and Elanga would play wide. But then Elanga's playing as a 10, which I didn't really get. And I thought he looked better, much better when Reina came on and Origi went off. But I'm not digging Origi out, Gary, because again, I think he plays quite well, but he lacks an end product. So can you make a case for why Nuno's picking him that perhaps some of us aren't seeing? Because he's not going out there and stinking the joint up every game, but we're just not getting the end product from him.
No, I think the problem may be because him and Hudson-Odoi, you know, never really got a continued chance in the team, you know, consecutive games, but now they are. We know what Origi can do. We saw him at Liverpool, but that was just, you know, coming on as a sub. It's a difficult one to assess, Origi, because he's never really figured in anybody's, you know, starting 11 at the highest level, I don't think, that, you know, consistently. But going back to Reina, you know, what I liked about him when he came on, he just did the easy thing. He saw what he wanted to see and he did it. You know, it was quickly, 1-2 touch, you know, that's what it wasn't extravagant passing, but it was, you know, what needed doing at that particular point. I watched Man City Arsenal yesterday. They do things like that. They, you know, they're at the top, but, you know, when they need to, they just do the simple thing. You know, and then when they get in areas where their creative players do their thing, then, you know, you see them explode into life. You need somebody with that ability just to do the simple things in midfield, not just hang on to it. You know, play it 5 yards, get it back, play it 10 yards, but do it quickly. You know, I think that's where we struggle. We're a sluggish in possession, and that's where you get caught because you give the opposition time to close you down. That's why in training we always used to do one touch, two touch, three touch. You know, you start up with three touches and you saw well, that's not very good because you get closed down by the opposition. Then you go to two touch and you make it more difficult for the opposition. And if you've got the ability to do one touch as well, then, you know, you're a very good, like Man City, you know, they can do it. Liverpool can do it. You know, the top teams do it. But if you do it sometimes, you know, you're going to punish the opposition. But by being sluggish, it just, and that 45 minutes was totally sluggish, the first 45, you know, and he came on and he did make a difference, Rayner.
Let me just highlight this from Lee Tilson. Very kind of you, Lee, giving £5 again. Really appreciate that. That's a very kind gesture. I'd love to see the team that finished on Saturday start tomorrow. You're a big advocate of Rayner then, Greg, and you touched on it really at the start there. What did he show, what he showed at Dortmund, or was it slightly different in terms of, he worked like Gary, he was quite one touch, two touch. He wasn't like a driving runner, magician on the ball type player. Is that what he is?
Yeah, I mean, laying it off and creating chances. That's exactly what he did in a very small amount of time we saw him. And he, yeah, let's not be like, even I'm not going to get carried away because he didn't have a lot of the ball, but he affected the game. He got us that goal, really. So he's an expensive player. He's a big loanee and a huge name that hasn't had any minutes at all, really, has he? So what is it, eight games left now, I think. If we're going to play him, we're going to have to start playing him soon, especially if he can affect a game, which he clearly did on Saturday. Because like I say, that little layoff to Gibbs White, it's like they'd been spending a lot of time together in training, maybe. So if that is the case and there's that chemistry, then get him on there, because might be eight games we see him and then we'll never see him again in a Forest shirt, which is more than likely.
Let me also thank Mark Sox One for becoming a channel member as well. Very good of you, Mark. On the Palace goal, Gary, in real time, it looked like, I think it was a really good goal, actually. It was a good ball and a good layoff and finish from Mateta. Was there anything we could have done to stop it? Felipe, maybe a little out of position. Williams got a runner off him.
I was going to say, we had another avoidable goal. We've used that sentence so many times on the podcast, but it was avoidable, you know, early in the build. You know, we had the ball, we gave it away, I think, again. I'm not sure who was responsible. And then it all became too easy. You know, I watched it again. It's where, you know, Chris Wood scored his goal from. And you could see, you know, what was going to happen. It was stoppable, but we didn't stop it. You know, you have to close down. You have to stop balls coming in your box, but we didn't do that. It was all too easy. Yeah, it looked good, and it was good. You still got to execute what you've got in front of you, and they did that beautifully. But, you know, we let them do that, and you can't do that at that level because you get, you know, going to get punished.
I thought it was an avoidable goal because we came out of our shape. Felipe was on Mateta's shoulder, decided to fly out of the back four to try and impact the pass, failed to do so. Eze opens up the space, flicked to Mateta, who found himself in oceans, didn't he? Because Felipe couldn't recover after stepping out. So that was a mistake. But the way you prevent the goal is prevent the pass from midfield. He threaded a needle to get it into Eze, but there was not enough pressure on the ball. And it wasn't a warning shot because they scored. But minutes later, there's another through ball as pierced the defence. Eze finds himself one-on-one and Sols has to pull out a save that could have completely killed the game. So you've got to trust the shape. And I think there's this mindset in a sense that Felipe's got there to take responsibility and charge out. But if you're in a settled team that trusts the shape, you don't see Man City breaking the back four. You know their CDMs are going to do what's expected of them and alleviate pressure from the centre-halves. So that came from forcing it, over trying. And all of a sudden, against any Premier League attack, Mateta finds himself in acres, and it was a really cool, calm finish. We had far too much space to do so, and that was our own making.
Yeah. Well, Matt mentioned, we talked about Larry Lloyd as a centre-half earlier. No way would he have done that. And if his right-hand man there would have done it as well, he'd have known about it half-time, believe me. You know, you do what you play to your strengths. And Murillo can do that. Felipe probably not as much. So, you know, don't, at this level, don't take those chances. You know, play the percentage and do your stuff in that final third. You know, that's where you create things. Yes, you can create things from the back, as Murillo does, because his range of passing is so good. But, you know, edit and kick it. Do the basics first as in your position, and, you know, you'll be okay.
So I was going to ask about Felipe, because there's a bit of a consensus emerging that his legs have gone. Do you see that, Gary? Because he does like to step out. He did it. He got booked because he got wrong side. And then late in the game, he tried to step in front of a player and he won it. But if he hadn't won it, they were in on goal. And I think a player 10 years ago, he could definitely have done that. But can he still do that now? Or should he come out of the team? Because, you know, the notion his legs have gone. Do you see that, Gary?
Problem is, you know, his game time has not been particularly good, has it? He's been injured. You know, he keeps coming back in the side. And you can't keep doing that. Your body won't allow you to do that. You know, you'll get away with it for, you know, 60 minutes or whatever, and then something will happen like that. When you get older, I played centre-half when I got older, but, you know, I read the game quite well because I played up front. So, you know, I knew what was going on in front of me and what the striker would do. So it made it a bit easier for me. But when your legs, you know, mine went at 36 and my body told me, right, you've got to pack in now. Simple as that. But, you know, a player of his ability, if he's fully fit, would get away with that when he is fully fit. But when he's not fully fit, things like that will happen because he's a reader of the game and you can just drop a couple of yards if there's pace against you. And it's all about concentration levels as well. If you switch off, which you can do, you know, as the best player in the world, you can switch off. But it's the level you're at when you do switch off that gets you caught out. And, you know, the better players will do that to you. And that's what happened in that build-up.
There was one other instance where we switched off temps that springs to mind. There was a set piece in the second half where they just passed it around us. And then as they're whipping it towards the far corner, I think we got away with that one, certainly. What did you make of our defensive set piece work in general in this one? Because it's been our Achilles heel.
Yeah, so poor. I mean, there's a technical point there that a pre-planned Forest move gets around three Forest defenders in three passes, and that's positive planning on their point. But I think more generally, how many times do we win that first ball? It's one of the things that Nuno mentioned in his post-match. If it's an attacking set piece or a defensive set piece, the way you force an outcome in your favour is to have the first touch, be that a flick on at the near stick, be it a commanding clearance from the centre half. We don't do that. That's individual aggression, individual desire to want to attack that ball. And so many times we've seen, be it Luton away, be it the Palace example here, where we are slow off the mark defending set pieces. It's an obvious Achilles heel. It's happening time and time again. It's something we speak about a lot. It's something that's referenced on Match of the Day and all of the analysis that goes on. We are not aggressive enough at being the first contact at set pieces. And that, again, individual responsibility, desire. Gary described earlier that ability to read what's happening, to get in front of the man at the front stick, to protect the goalkeeper, whatever it might be. It's an obvious weakness. Anyone that assesses Forest before they play them sees that. They play on it and it exacerbates it again, 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 again. And there's no quick fix for that. It's haunted us this season. It's one of the main reasons we find ourselves where we are. And even at this stage of the season, I haven't seen any marked improvement, particularly in the way that we defend set pieces, even having known that it's a problem. So, yeah, continues to worry me. And opposing teams continue to try to exploit it. And Palace, let us off the hook there a little bit, didn't they? Just on Felipe, there was one recovery, wasn't there, where, again, he stepped out. I think there was a ball into Mateta in behind. And he did. He recovered 5 yards in a foot race and smashed him into the stands in front of Brian Clough. He still has an aggression and a read and everything else. He's just 5% off that pace. I wonder if, like Gary says, his ability is going to come from tuning in, from playing successive games. So that's a really interesting selection ahead of Tuesday, because he does still have something as a leader, as an influence for Murillo. I think if I was coaching him, I just had to tell him to be a defender that defends. Don't step out. Be more Larry Lloyd. Win your headers, win your tackles. Let him know. Put him into row B if you get a chance. But we don't need you carrying the ball out. We don't need you overplaying. We don't need you stepping out of position to try and block something. You do you. And as you get into the latter stages of your career, he's already announced his retirement in 3 months' time. You have to play that little bit within yourself and just focus on what you're good at.
Well, going back to that, the partnership, Kenny Burns, because he played as a striker, had the comfort and the knowledge to bring it out because, you know, he was a striker and he had that ability to do it and he could pick a pass, a range of passing, and Lloydie knew that and Burnsy knew. You're spot on, Temps, about that. But going back to the set pieces, it really annoys me about the modern game because they think when we played, that was it then and, you know, don't take anything from them, you know, because it was a totally different game. But what we did at set pieces, we were told, right, that's your man. If he scores, it's your fault. You know, space never scored a goal. You know, all this, you know, zonal marking. Space never scores a goal. You know, if it's your man and you let him score, it's your fault. Simple as. What's wrong with that? You know you're picking up. You know, and you know if there's somebody. How many times do you see players free on the edge of the box when the ball comes out and nobody's picking them up? You know, it's just weird. It's you know, just some of the things from our era do work. I mean, we used to have that corner at the near post where Robbo put it in, me or Lloyd deflect it on, and then Burnsy or somebody headed it in the back of the net. And, you know, when I was at United, you know, Dave Sexton was talking about something and Gordon McQueen piped up. He said, Gaffer, he said, why don't we do that one where Stevie Coppell crosses the ball, it hits my head and goes in. And, you know, we just absolutely fell apart. But it makes perfect sense. Play to your strengths. You know, it's not rocket science.
Just on attacking set pieces, Gary, I feel like Morgan White's hitting them where he's been told to. They seem to be all be told, pile it in on Dean Henderson or whoever's in goal and see if we can win the first contact. And we never do. So is it Morgan's fault? Is it a lack of variety? Is it the players' fault for not getting there? What's your verdict on it?
I don't think they were that good at the weekend. I think they were too high, too far post. They weren't whipped in, you know, with the quality I think he normally does. You know, just mix it up a little bit. You know, you see teams do that. They play it short. Don't, you know, always expect the unexpected. Don't be too predictable. But I'm trying to think the last time we scored from a set piece, from a corner.
We scored when Willy Bolly headed one in at Old Trafford. I think that's from a free kick. But I think we've only got two set piece goals all season.
Yeah, that's right. And I think a part of that is the stupidest law in football where, you know, you see all this pulling and shoving and throwing people to the floor. And, you know, in days gone by, not just as far back as our, you know, team, you know, it would have been a penalty. Just bring that rule in. If somebody's pulling you about and pulls you to the ground before the ball comes in, it's a penalty. You'd soon stop doing it. It takes away from, you know, football supporters seeing the art of centre-half scoring. I mentioned it before. And that's why I think centre-halves don't score as many goals as they used to, because of that ridiculous rule.
People are saying Niakate against Villa, which would be right. And did Niakate score in the cup as well? I can't remember that one actually, but yeah, Niakate at Villa. Talking of, there were positives from the game, Greg. Temps referenced that save from Matt Sells. I thought the game was on the line there, and that was a big save. And Sells was arguably man of the match. I don't think he could do anything wrong. I don't think he did anything wrong in that game at all, did he?
No, and we had a great view of their goal, and you know, that wasn't anything to do with him. It was a cracking shot. Yeah, he had a good game. He distributed it well when he got it, and he made a couple of decent saves. So he was certainly the better, least frustrating goalkeeper on that pitch on Saturday. I thought Hendo let himself down, that time wasting from the off. You know, he hadn't made, he could have come back to that ground and had a nice applause off the pitch, but I don't think many were happy with him and the way he was. So that was a shame to see. But yeah, Sells, hopefully we've finally found our goalkeeper this far into the season. It was a good performance. And if he does similar on Tuesday, all we should have to do is score and we'll be all right.
Can just go back to that time wasted. I've never seen a team waste time as much as Crystal Palace did at the weekend.
It was pathetic.
But there was 3 minutes of injury time at first half. And only
Two minutes.
And yeah. Second half. And, you know, you could hear the fans every time. You could see Yatesy going up to the referee saying, you know, come on, what? It's every time. And it was every time, you know, that he got the ball at his feet. And every time they got a free kick or a throw-in, it was just wasting time, even in the first half, as early as that. And to see that amount of time just added on was ridiculous.
It got that much of a pantomime in the first half that our end in Lower Bridgeford started counting. And we got to 30 seconds before he released the ball. If that's the second half, you get a yellow card for time wasting and there's 8-10 minutes injury time. The lack of consistency is ridiculous. And for them to got away with that, the game plan worked for Palace. You know, I'd hate to be following that up and down the country if that's how you're going to play every time you go up. But it seems to work for them. And, you know, they'll be happy finishing 15th every season playing like that.
I'd be happy finishing 15th. I didn't mind the time wasting as much, but it's on the ref, isn't it? You need to give 2 minutes. I mean, that was horrific refereeing again. And then, like Greg said, 6 minutes second half, you know, for what? You know, it should have been 6 minutes first half. I know Richards went down with a knee injury, but yeah, that was poor. You shrugged at my comment about finishing 15th there. What did you? What was that about? You didn't like it?
Me?
Yeah.
Yeah, every season. No, thanks. We need progression, you know. We'll finish in 15th this season. Yeah, happy days. But I want my Thursday nights in wherever, Albania every so often.
One day, hopefully so. Other players who played well, Temps. I mean, Hudson-Odoi, I thought, was really good, and we saw a lot from him. And Murillo, again, as you know, I thought he was really good against Mateta. Anyone else for you, or was it just those two? Would we find the positives from the game?
Well, the one I want to speak about is Chris Wood. I don't think anyone's done that goal justice yet in the description of it. Hopefully Gary can in a sec, but he meant every piece of that. There was that glance while the ball was in mid-flight to assess where the keeper was. The flick off a part of the head, which nobody should be using to score a goal in the Premier League. And there was a great camera angle where you could see his eyes flick to where he'd put it, and it just looped perfectly over Hendo. Such a technically brilliant goal. I think most players would have tried to kind of nod it on with the momentum of the ball towards that front post. And he did the opposite of what everyone else in the ground was thinking. So yeah, far more technical ability in Chris Wood than I ever gave him credit for. I think with two fit strikers at this moment in time, you can make a case for starting Chris Wood over Taiwo. The stats bear that out as well, and it has taken time for us to work out what he is, how to get the best out of him. He's come on another gear as well. I'd love to think that we're talking to Chris Wood about extending his contract, because he's been the major reason, we've picked up points throughout Taiwo's injury problems. And I don't think he's quite had the credit beyond the Forest support base, who've seen it, have seen what he's done for us. I don't think he's getting the credit for what he is or what he has been in the Premier League for a long time now. His stats bear it out, and that was a magnificent goal.
I said that, you know, the programme started. You know, don't be under any illusion that that was fluke or anything else. It may have looked easy, but believe me, it wasn't. You have to adjust your body. You have to know what's around you, where the goalkeeper is, and he knew all that. And that's what great strikers do. They're aware of what's around them, what they have to do when it comes their way. It was a terrific goal. But going back to players who I thought did well, I thought Aina did well, to be fair. Yeah. I thought, you know, first off, you know, when we did have the ball, it was him who was, you know, making things happen a little bit. You know, he was getting past players. He was causing a few problems. Yeah, I thought he did okay.
Yeah, I thought Aina was good. Toffolo is very, very consistent. He's a bit of a Yates of a fullback. You know what you're going to get from him, but Aina is.
What he does, he puts the ball in early. He's one of the few players who will get in an area and say, right, it's coming in the box, and he will put it in the box. You know, it might not all be the greatest quality, but at least it makes defenders defend. We don't make defenders defend enough. You know, we make it too easy for them by loitering and hanging on to the ball too long. He doesn't do that. He puts it in early.
Do you know, Toffolo, that is not Aina. Toff, Gary. Yeah, I agree. Yeah. Go on, Greg, sorry.
No, going back to Wood, Dabber, who commented earlier, he commented at the start of the thing. He says that Wood's got a 37% conversion rate. Surely that can't be right.
He's got the best. I don't know if that number's right. He's got the best conversion rate in the Premier
That's
League.
Incredible.
Ahead of Taiwo. Taiwo was up there as well. But yeah, I mean, I know he's 32. But I feel like you have to give him a new contract, Greg, don't you?
Yeah. There's a deal. He scored 7 in 8. He's in hot form, and he's not showing. I mean, 32 is not old, is it? I know these top strikers, he can go 34, 36. So certainly, if we stay in the Premier League, another season of Chris Wood, because you can't rely on Taiwo because of the injuries. Absolutely. Get him in. He's scoring goals, and he's very clever, and he's clearly good for the team.
Yeah, because you wouldn't. We'd be turning our noses up a bit, wouldn't we, Temps? You know, if we said, "Oh, we signed a player who scored 8 goals in 11 games with a career record," I know he's not prolific, and I would only expect him to score. Say he's played 38 games next season. If he got 10 goals, that's good. But yeah, we'd be a bit silly not to offer him a new deal now, wouldn't we, based on what he's done this season?
Look, played 27, scored 11, 38% shot conversion. And 66% shot accuracy, easy for me to say. He's an effective striker in the Premier League. You can rewind a year, and you know, I was bagging him a bit, saying he wasn't showing, wasn't quite doing enough. We weren't adapting to him, he hadn't adapted to us. And of course, the Newcastle hat-trick was an epiphany for all of us. But to maintain that and to still be effective, because that wasn't a typical Chris Wood performance or necessarily typical Chris Wood goals. that even the goal last week where Bohr's coming across, he's used the outside of his foot to flick it against the momentum of the keeper. That those split second instinctive decisions, the reason why the likes of Chris Wood and Gary Birtle score goals at the top level, and I barely score a goal in, you know, Div 6 of the Dog and Duck. You just see it in the slow-mo and the replays, that thinking, that speed of thought, that ability to turn that into bodily action. It's incredible. And I think Chris Wood's been a real bright spot this season. Really, really impressed me. And age is irrelevant if you're in that kind of form. Sign him up, extend his time at Forest, because he can be an effective player for at least 2 more years to come, in my view.
If we put it earlier, he might be a bit more prolific as well. People are, you know, because that is his strength. It's not extravagant movement from him. It never is with great strikers. You know, you watch Haaland. I always watch Haaland. You know, he'll stop, and then it's just half a yard that it gets him that little bit, you know, of time from his marker. And Chris Wood does that when the ball does come into the area that he's best at exploiting. So, you know, when we get in good areas, don't always look up. Just put it in an area when you know where your teammate should be. He'll be there. If he's not, like I said earlier, he'll put his hand up and it's his fault. But just give him more opportunity. Get him in the game when you've got the chance. And he will, you know, he'll score goals for us.
Yeah, I think the one reservation would just be that he is not injury prone, but he does, you know, pick up the old hamstring injury. But I think you have to take that risk. But I suppose with Taiwo's fitness as well, you do run the slight risk of leaving yourself with zero strikers, but I would still do it, I think, for sure. And I did speak to Kieran Maguire last week, and after we finished the call, I asked him about Chris Wood and his contract and whether it would be smart accountancy to extend it just because of amortisation spreading out the transfer fee. And he said it probably wouldn't make much difference because you've still got to pay him, you know, £5 million is a notional figure to extend, you know, in wages for a new contract. So it might have a short-term impact, but not long-term. But I thought I'd mention that. And we'll probably mention the dreaded FFP briefly at the end when we talk about Everton and their accounts. Just on Fulham then, Greg, their away record, I didn't realise, is pretty bad. They've actually only got one more point away from home compared to us. At home, they seem a different kettle of fish. So, but on the flip side, they do have some good players. Polina, Iwobi's really stepped up. Muniz, who's entered my fantasy team, is absolutely on fire. So how are you feeling about this game tomorrow? Is it one where you're wary or confident?
Confident. We've got to pick up points and it's the perfect opportunity to do it. We're at home. We'll look at other teams and see Luton are away at Arsenal, so shouldn't pick up points. It's our big opportunity to build a gap, to get that gap that should hopefully start to see us through to the end of the season safely. It's certainly not a must win, just like Crystal Palace wasn't. We got the point that took us out the relegation zone. However, it's a huge opportunity for 3 points. Fulham, like you say, they're not all that away from home. They showed their weaknesses against a very poor Sheffield United team that, I must say as well, their crowd really got up for that game. And you watch that game back and there's a great atmosphere, the type of atmosphere that we certainly need and know it helps and affects the players. It's a huge game. It really is. And it's a great chance. And get 3 points there and everything looks a hell of a lot different and more rosy.
What did you make of the reaction at full-time, Greg? For our game, it was very muted. It felt like I didn't cheer or boo, or you know, was, I never do. But they were a bit deflating, I think.
It was a relief in a sense that we know what happens at the end of games with Forest. You know, we could absolutely concede and they started to put a little bit pressure on. So I must admit, the 6 minutes went up, thought, oh, we've got a chance here. But also watching that clock thinking, you know, a point, we knew Luton had lost and a point gets us out that relegation zone. So yeah, it was very muted and probably the correct reaction for the result and the performance. But the main thing was getting away from that relegation zone already, the first game back from being in it.
Yeah, you wanted to come in on Fulham there, Gary, before.
No, I looked at those two games and I would have said the important game, as always, is the first one. Get the 3 points against Crystal Palace. Then that sets you up for the Fulham game. But because of, you know, how the first half panned out on Saturday, I think the game against Fulham now just represents a huge task. And going into the Tottenham game, I think we've got to win it. But our record against Fulham isn't brilliant. It was embarrassing this season at their place to get beat by the amount we did. So, you know, hope that's out of the players' minds. And I just think we've got to be more positive. It all depends on the starting 11 for me now. I think that has got to put a smile on the faces of the fans. When they look at that starting 11, it's got to be a positive one. It's got to be one where you think, oh, yeah, we've got a chance here. And, you know, a lot of people have been saying, well, start the team that finished the game against Palace. You know, you wouldn't be against that, but it's got to be, I think, the most pivotal team selection he's going to have to make, Nuno, this, you know, since he's been at the club. If he gets it right and we win, you know, that sets us up for Tottenham beautifully. If he goes negative and a bit conservative and we don't get anything out of Fulham, it heaps loads of pressure on him and everybody else. So he's got to get this one right, without a doubt.
And it does feel like a big game, a big day in general, Temps, because Luton go to Arsenal, and you can never assume, but you would back Arsenal to win that certainly. And then Everton go to Newcastle, which could actually be any score. Brentford are still in it, although they did play very well against Man United and should have won that game. They've got Brighton at home. And I'll reference Burnley because they're three unbeaten now. They are still only on 18 points, but you just never know. So Wolves at home. So if we win, and it's always such a big if, Temps, it could be, you know, huge in the context of the season if the results go as we hope elsewhere.
Well, look, simple mindset for me. Two-team league needs to do better than Luton. That's why we forgave the draw at the weekend, because Spurs came back and denied Luton any points. They travel to Arsenal on Wednesday, like you say. And I'll echo what Paul Morley said in the comments. If we were to take 4 points from these two games in any combination, we have to be satisfied with 4 days' work there, because that's significant progress at a time when Luton have struggled. Beyond the appeal, it gives us that focus, that ability to know what we need to do. I still don't think Sheffield United or Burnley come into this. I think it's too little too late, despite that uptick in form, despite Sheffield United finding a few goals now, and Burnley being on that streak, like you say. Let's do better than Luton, but let's take care of our business. And 4 points from in 4 days at this stage of the season, for me, would ease us clear, make us feel a lot better about ourselves, because there's no way that Luton get anything from the Emirates.
I think Everton are a big factor, though, still, for me. Like, they released their accounts yesterday, Greg. £89 million losses, £500 million losses in a year. And it's ridiculous I'm talking about finances over football first. But they're surely going to get another points deduction, and which will drag them into it. Also, on the football pitch, they've got no wins in 12. They're just not playing well. We talk about us not playing well, but they're not, obviously. And Luton, for all the love for Luton, they're not winning games or picking up points. But your mate's the big Everton fan. I don't know if you've spoken to him, but they've got to be right in the picture as well, haven't they?
Yeah, they've known they are all season. Yeah, my mate Baz, he's very knowledgeable on everything Everton. And their concerns have gone almost past this season. You feel like now they're in such dire straits that they're not so much worried about the next points deduction. It's what happens next season, whatever league they're in. You know, they've got this fantastic new stadium, but everything behind the scenes just seems an absolute mess. I don't want to stay up on the back of Everton's points deduction, put it that way. I'd take it, absolutely, but I'd personally rather see Luton take the drop, unfortunately for them. I've got some good Everton mates, and I think they're a good club that I want to see stay in the Premier League. But yeah, I mean, they are certainly not out of it, because they're going to get, I think they will get some kind of points deduction or fine, won't they, by the sounds of it. And that puts them right in it, because the form's not there. They're not happy with Dyche. And yeah, it's going to be an interesting one. I just don't want it to be decided on who gets what asterisks next to their name at the end of the season.
Yeah, I mean, the accounts say that if they get, well, it's not an Everton show, obviously, but if they get relegated, there's a material threat to the business. Just the catastrophic losses in terms of wages to turnover. And ours was bad, but theirs is, yeah, way worse. So like Greg says, you don't want to go down on an asterisk, and I would take it, but they're a club in a bit of a state. Thank you very much to Trevor Clark for becoming a member. I know Trevor's a regular viewer, so good to have you on board, Trevor. Right. Any thoughts on the relegation picture now, Gary? I know we're talking about how we're struggling, but we have to remember every team at the bottom, I think there's like one win in 20 games cumulatively between the teams at the bottom. It's a bit of a car crash. We just have to come out with a couple more points than them now, don't we?
It's simple as, you know, the old cliche, one game at a time. You know, you look at the run of fixtures. You don't want to look at the run of fixtures. Just, you know, Fulham is the next game. Go and win that game. And then that gives you so much confidence going into the next game. It's a free hit then, Tottenham. You know, going there, you could be positive because you just picked up 4 points at home. And, you know, Tottenham, we saw them against Luton. It was late on, they snatched the game. So, you know, Luton go there positive and nearly get something out of it. You know, the other big game, obviously the hard one for us, is Man City. But our running, as we've already spoken, is looking a little bit easier, if that's the thing to say in the Premier League. But, you know, we can stay up. It's in our hands. You know, and that's all you can ask for. If it's in your hands, you know, that's what you want. You don't want it out of your hands, relying on other teams to drop points and things like that. You know, we can do it if we're positive. And like I say, for me, that's team selection tomorrow is going to be the most pivotal one he'll make for me.
Quick word before we go on to any other business for our second sponsor this episode, Brewbacker, as ever. And I always say owned by a Forest season ticket holder in Danny Baker. Appreciate his support. Details of what they do are in the episode description. But if you've got any noise issues around your business, they are the people for you. Right. Any other business? Greg, you know you've got something you want to talk about.
Yeah, it was a last minute thing because we were so busy with the display and everything on Saturday that obviously went quite well. But we got invited to the museum opening. So it was a surprise how good it was, to be honest. So impressive. The old entrance to the Pitch Sport Diner. You walk down some steps that straight away you get greeted with all this incredible memorabilia and go in to watch this superb film that's been put together with it's just really, really impressive. And got to meet Stuart Pearce again, my all-time hero, and John McGovern was there. They did a bit of a speech, but it was just like, they haven't asked me to say this club or anything, but I was so impressed with it. And I don't know whether you have to get your name on a waiting list or just book, but I couldn't recommend it enough. It's not often we praise the club for stuff, but that museum is really, really good and something to be proud of. So shout out to them. Shout out to Will, I think, who was behind it a lot. And it was just good. It was a good, proud start to the day for me, just seeing all that. So, yeah, that's it from me.
Were you there, Gary?
No.
No one's going to do a joke about Gary being in the museum, are they?
I know, but it's fair, yeah. Key part of it. I was lining up. I thought they can't say that.
Oh, are the waxwork statues any good of us?
It's quite interactive.
Gods comes to Nottingham. No, I don't know. I don't even know what's in it. I was talking to one of the lads at Forest yesterday, and we were talking about it, and it all sounds very, very good indeed. Yeah, I look forward to seeing it. Must admit.
Why did you have a camera crew? I can't let that go. Because I felt like, I said this in our WhatsApp group, I felt like I wanted to go and say hello, but I thought they might... I thought your handlers were going to tase me if I got too near your personal space.
Yeah, I might just say all will be revealed and it leaves that little bit of mystery behind it. But yeah, that was a bit awkward, but I enjoyed it. It was a good day. One more thing on the museum, shirking that question. When you walk in, there's a fantastic club shop as well. So it's just, they've really set it up right. I don't know who they got in to get it going, but it was impressive.
Very good. Very good. Well done, Forrest. Thank you very much to Jane Clapton for becoming a member as well. Lots of people signing up today, which is great to see. Temps, anything else from you before we depart?
I was just going to mention, on this day in 1995, Forest 7, Sheffield Wednesday 1, certainly one of the games that I remember, the classic Forest side, Crossley in goal. Stuart Pearce, I think, scored first with that left foot rocket from a free kick. Colly Moore got a couple, Roy got a couple, the Bohemian chip, just an iconic game. And yeah, that was April the 1st. So yeah, just want to mention there. I'm not surprised Greg has camera crews following around all the time, to be honest. He's quite big time now, isn't he? I think it's only a matter of time before Carragher is eased out and Mitchell comes in. I think that dynamic is far more telly. It could become like another Roy Keane and Mika Richards thing if Greg and Gary Neville keep sparring as they do. But yeah, really enjoyed that clip, obviously.
There's episode two is out next week, I should say, as well. And we have to ask questions. And it's fair to say that he was as unimpressed with the question I had from him as he was with my answers to his. So it'll be interesting, the reaction when that one comes out.
Have you seen this yet, Gary? Greg going toe-to-toe with Gary Neville?
No, I haven't.
I say toe-to-toe. Neville didn't let him get a word in. And people were well on your side on Twitter, Greg. So well done.
Thank you.
Right. Any other business, Gary Birtles, before we go? Anything you want to add?
No, just rest in peace, Larry. You know, it's a really sad week. You know, last year, all of us were still here, you know, the European Cup winning team. And now we've lost, you know, two of our mates. So, yeah, really sad week. And, yeah, it's it makes you question your own mortality when, you know, things like that happen a little bit. So, yeah, very sad.
Well, we're very glad to have you with us as ever, Gary, and enjoyed your contribution. Nothing from me apart from just to say about the live show. Again, get your tickets Thursday, April the 11th. I promise it will be a good night with Fletch, Lewis, Mike and Temps on the panel. And we'll do more through the year. And I'm sure Gary will be on a panel at some point so you can see everyone involved in the show. It's been really enjoyed this today to have 450 people with us on a bank holiday Monday morning, which is great to see. I'll be back tomorrow, obviously, because we're playing Fulham. So post-match show then. Mark Southerns is back after a couple of weeks away with Chris Aylmer. And then Wednesday we'll have Kelvin, maybe Greg, maybe Temps, maybe both. I haven't really asked them about their availability. They're doing a lot of heavy lifting this week with everyone else on holiday, so I'm grateful to them. And then Spurs opposition view on Thursday, match preview on Friday. And then Sunday, we'll have a post-match show. What do you make of the Gameby move, Greg? I forgot about that. Obviously, you'll be there to speak for the fans who actually go. Are you pretty pissed off about it or not?
For once, very selfishly, this is, and it's not the view of the majority of the fans, absolutely. But for once, it suited me. I was going to have to leave work in Nottingham at like 4:30 and somehow make it down. So I've never liked Monday night games anyway. I think they don't think about the fans at all with that. But I know it's an exceptional event in the fact that I don't think Spurs could get the safety certificate for the game from the council because there was just literally no transport and they knew it was going to be a disaster. So, yeah, exceptional circumstance, but a lot to learn from it. Again, you know, Sky pulling the shots maybe and saying you've got to do this, that, the other when it is, but you've got to think about the fans and not just change a game. Offer transport. I know there was a lot of fans that, and this isn't on Forest at all. They didn't have a say in it, but you know, there's so much money in this Premier League. Fans have booked hotels, trains that are non-refundable, all for the Monday, which with a week's notice, I mean, what do you do? You just have to book more and spend more money. So yeah, there needs to be something in place to protect fans because it's not easy. It's not cheap to be going doing all this. I know we do it because we love it, but you can't take the mick with a week's notice like that without offering something at least. And, you know, the Premier League should chuck a load of coaches on or something. Something has to change. It never will, but yeah, it's taking the mick at that late notice.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. Agree with what you're saying. Right, we shall leave it there. Thanks for everyone's company. Michael Temple, thank you very much.
Cheers, fellas. Mate, I'm surprised you're surprised by the numbers. Surely our audience work, right? It's a bank holiday Monday. Or have you got this negative view of our audience? Are they all hanging around the job centre? Where's the surprise come from?
Well, I said, I crawled out of bed at about 9:15, so I thought everyone might be having a good lie-in till lunchtime. So it says more about me than it says about our audience.
It's your lifestyle, not theirs. Give them some credit.
Lots of credit to our audience. Thank you very much, everyone. Thank you, Temps. Thank you, Greg Mitchell.
Thank you. I enjoyed that. It's nice I'm not giving you the stick for once as well. Good work, Temps.
Gary Birtle, thank you very much.
Thank you, gentlemen. Pleasure as always.
It certainly was. Have a good day, everyone. Enjoy tomorrow's game and we shall talk, hopefully, about a win tomorrow. But in the meantime, we shall see you soon.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.